Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Billy Green. I am the president and CEO of Evergreen Holding Corporations. Evergreen Holding Corporations is a holding corporation that owns Evergreen Sweeteners, which is my primary business, Evergreen Transport, and a number of other small subsidiaries that roll up our family business.
That's exciting. Billy, thanks so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Happy 2021. We're off to a great start with this conversation, so that's great. Tell us a little bit more about your background, where you come from, what's been the career path, and what has, you know, led you to build your current organization.
So I grew up in South Florida, in Bay Harbor, Florida, which is the north side of Miami Beach. I went to school in Miami Shores at Miami Country Day School. And after that, I went to Tufts University for 4 years. Did a stint in London for a little business and a little education, and came back to my family's business in 1994, after I officially graduated from Tufts University. I've worked in my family's business since I was 15 years old. So it was a natural fit for me to come back and work in it. And I did a little of everything in terms of the business. Switching back to school, I played football. I was in the band, always very, very much involved with things that went on with school. And always seemed to migrate towards a leadership role, whether it was sports or band or student body and stuff like that. So when I got into the family business, I'm fourth generation in my family's business, taking on bigger and more challenging roles to get to the leadership role was pretty easy for me. It's something I always wanted to do. And I basically cleared the path to get it done.
Oh, that's super exciting. And, you know, congratulations on your guys' family success, fourth generation. That's, you know, that's quite impressive. Tell us a little bit more about the company. What problem are you guys solving through your products and services?
Okay, so the primary business is the sweetener business. So we're basically an industrial seller of sweeteners to large corporations, big dairies, breweries, bottlers. Candy manufacturers. Most of our sugar and sweeteners go out in bulk form, in liquid bulk form. We do some what's called food service or industrial size bags of product for smaller users. But for the most part, we would be considered a super regional importer, processor, and distributor. Hold on one second. Amanda, considered a super regional processor, distributor, and manufacturer of sweeteners. So we solve a problem for our customers' supply chain needs. We provide some inventory on that we take into our facilities. We provide a lot of just-in-time delivery services. Sometimes we provide a soft spot for their cash management and their financial needs by being a little more just-in-time. And also having a sizable footprint in our region, it allows us to service multiple facilities from our customer. For example, in the state of Florida, a large customer might have three or four locations, and then maybe one in Georgia. We can handle all their locations, no problem, as long as they're regional, and we could pretty much do it for a very attractive price and get them the just-in-time service that they need for their inventory management, their cash management. And if they want to expand, sometimes there's a little bit of a budgetary unknown and a supply chain unknown for them. We give them a little breath of fresh air because we manage our inventories to help them manage their inventories.
Right. Okay. Well, that's very exciting. You know, very complex system. And, you know, I'm pretty sure there's never a shortage of sweeteners at your house.
never shortage. Funny enough, it's like the old adage, like if I ask someone who works for Hershey's, oh man, this must be great. You must love chocolate. You're like, no.
It doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't work that way. So yeah, we're low on sweeteners in our household, but we do sell a lot of it to everybody else.
Right, for sure. That's great. That's great to hear. I'd like to talk a little bit more about this. But before we do this, I want to take that a little bit, level up in terms of from the overall company culture standpoint. I'm pretty sure that continuous innovation and, creating that culture of innovation is almost, at the forefront for you guys as an organization to continue to evolve, continue to come up with better solutions, better products for your clients and so forth. So for you as, the head of organization, building and fostering that culture of innovation, I'm pretty sure it's an ongoing task. It's an ongoing project. Tell us a little bit more about some of the strategies that really help you build and foster such culture.
So there's a number of different things. So we have aligned ourselves with some very large suppliers that are on the forefront of innovation in the food business. They spend a massive amount of their budget in the sweetener space, and then also in the food ingredient space, coming up with a unbelievable myriad of products. We try to stay in front of them as much as possible with the products that we feel that we can take to market the most successfully. So in the sweetener space, for example, high intensity sweeteners have been around for a long time, but the last 5 or 6 years with stevia products and naturally extruded high intensity sweeteners, these products are now becoming a lot more palatable for our customer base. And in through that, we've been forced positively to learn about these products and then bring them to market through our customers. That's more on the innovation side, the technological customer need on the innovation side. Internally on the innovation side, we're always trying to manage our costs. We want to grow the business, but we want to grow the business successfully and keeping costs and finances and budgets in mind. So some innovations that we've done internally is we've invested heavily in expanding our Evergreen Transport side of our business, which is another subsidiary of Evergreen Holdings Company, to handle more of our products on our own trucks instead of going to outside carriers. Mm-hmm. If we put the products on our trucks, we have a much, much higher retention rate in terms of the customer usability. Trucks show up on time, they show up clean. We can manage the amount of time that they spend at the customer's facility unloading. And a lot of the times we can grab a backhaul load to keep our costs low and then pass those costs on to our customers or take the extra profitability to do it over again, buy more trucks and keep driving our costs down and down and down. So in terms of innovation, one side of it is food technology innovation to expand the business, which is really more of the heavy lifting of the innovation is done by our suppliers. Internally, we're constantly looking to be innovative to drive our costs down, to remain relevant and provide our customers with a very attractive price structure.
Right. Absolutely. No, that makes sense. A lot of times innovation is perceived as coming up with some type of industry disrupting product or service. But in essence, innovation can be in the form of improving internal processes and operations, which, some of the examples you're providing to us today is, around that, be able to serve your customers better by taking some of the, the actual logistics as an example for in-house and having a lot greater control of a lot of that. So that definitely makes sense. You mentioned briefly, as you were talking about innovation, how other industries and, the kind of the stevias of the world and a lot of the kind of the new world kind of products, and you guys had to adapt to that. I'm curious to get your take on what are the different trends or ideas that really excite you these days, whether from your industry standpoint or just anything in general. What do you think is the next big thing through the next period? What are you researching? What are you looking to invest in?
So by far and away, in terms of a product line or product lines, the move towards it's a supplementary move towards organics and non-GMO clean label products has really been a big mover in our marketplace over the last 4 or 5 years. I started an organic product line, which was primarily just granulated sugar, about 7 years ago. And we dabbled in it. I would say that the first year we moved maybe 200,000 pounds of product. Mm-hmm. Right now we're moving close to 200,000 pounds of product a day. So over a 6 or 7 year stretch, with starting out with one product line and then adding to it and adding further processing, a little bit of innovation, researching customer bases in many, many different facets. We sent out print, we sent out emails, we did a lot of legwork. We've grown the business and we've blown the roof off of it for our expectation. We're scratching the surface of the overall growth of this marketplace on the organic side, on the organic sugar side. Then add in the non-GM clean label edicts of the last 4 or 5 years, and we've started to grow our non-GM lines in the same manner that we grew our organic sugar lines. And we're probably in year, not so naturally, a lot of customers wanted non-GM products and a lot of our products because they were cane sugar derivatives were naturally non-GMO. We've expanded that to corn and tapioca and other types of sugars that are non-GMO. Started small, like the, 7 years ago with the sugar, and they've really, really grown in space. And this year is going to be a very, very good year for us. And we're taking some sizable inventory positions and really looking to expand our marketplace or our customer base. The marketplace is there. We just have to get in front of the customers. Both of those products are, again, we're just scratching the surface on the overall demand of non-GM and organics. So we feel that we're going to have a very, very nice run of these products over the next 7 to 10 years. And in being in the space, we can then refine our sales pitch, our raw material needs, where we want to warehouse the product, how we want to distribute it, what suppliers we want to marry ourselves to, and so on and so forth. So with each day that we're in the space, we get better at being in the space for a longer period of time. So right. Those are things that are really, really, really exciting to me. And they're, for the most part, not just me. I've got to get the enthusiasm out of my sales group and the supply chain group, and they're very, very enthusiastic about it also. So it's kind of a win-win internally.
That's exciting. And to take that a little bit further, is your customers or your clients, is that one of the main sources for, getting new ideas, new ways to improve, new ways to innovate and experiment?
A typical customer of ours buys maybe a traditional sugar or a traditional sweetener from us. Mm-hmm. And then they in turn want to have a complementary organic or a complementary clean label product that goes with their mass produced traditional product. Because we're in the traditional space and we sell them regularly, we're able to easily plug and play, help them in the organic space for the non-GM space. That's one way customers of ours want to innovate. The other way is there are new product lines rolling out almost every day in the food space that don't even have a traditional complement. So they just start with a clean label or they start as organic, and supply chain managers and buyers are scrambling to find viable suppliers. And since we have this nice basket of products, both in the organic and non-GM space and the traditional space also, this whole basket of products, we're a one-stop shop for a lot of their innovative needs.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. From a standpoint of you guys as an organization, I'm pretty sure for you as an executive or, being at the lead role, surrounding yourself with A players, with, the best talent is probably, a 24/7 job. I'm pretty sure whether you're actively recruiting or inactively, you're always looking for, the best people to join your organization. So from standpoint of attracting and retaining top talent, what strategies help you from that standpoint? What works well to attract, the best people to your company?
A couple of things. So we need to be a stalwart in the industry. and the industry in general has to think good of evergreen sweeteners, the evergreen holding companies. If we fail in that respect and we have a black eye out there, it's going to be very, very, very difficult to recruit talent. The talent in our industry as a regional distributor processor, let's call it, we don't have a lot of time, effort, or ability to train people. We need a lot of plug and play, whether it's operationally, management, or more specifically on the sales side. Mm-hmm. People have to come in fully trained. So it's becomes very, very difficult to recruit because we don't have a training program. So we need to be attractive as an employer. And to be attractive as an employer, we have to be attractive as a supplier to the bigger industry that's out there. And people need to think well of us. So if I'm going to personally approach somebody to recruit them, whether it's at a big industry event or one-on-one, you know, as a sidebar, I need to know that they think highly of Evergreen in our organization to start with, or else the conversation's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
Then it's about vetting are their needs in line with our needs. A lot of people in our industry basically get recruited from larger companies. The larger companies have the scale and the wherewithal to train and move people around. So people are highly mobile and fully trained. And now we're trying to find are the self-managed business professionals. That's a self-starter who is a plug and play that needs just a little bit of guidance in terms of the culture at Evergreen, our systems, what we feel, how we should go about selling, or how we should go about looking at logistics, or how we should go about management. And then they're on their own. They're allowed to make their mark on our organization. As a side to that, we have a lot of retention. We do not have a revolving door. I see the same faces all the time in my office. And also when I go to the other facilities, truck drivers, we just retain talent from top to bottom. So we don't necessarily have a lot of recruiting needs, but when we do, we have to go about it in a very, very specific, hold on one second.
Well, yeah, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, from retention standpoint that you're talking about, it's, you know, all boils down to the type of culture that you guys have built. And for somebody to come in and actually hit the ground running from the very beginning, I think that's, you know, of utmost importance, especially for your industry. So on that note, tell us a little bit more about your interview strategies when you interview potential candidates. You know, I'm pretty sure they go through multiple rounds of interviews before you. What does the interview with you look like? And more importantly, what do you look for in some of the responses when you interview candidates?
This is where an area where I don't interview a lot of candidates. Like I said, we have a lot of retention. So I rarely get to interview. But going back through the last 25 or so years of interviews, one, the person needs to be fully vetted, and I typically know who they are. I either know them because they've come to us, and explained to us who they are and what they do, or I know of them in the industry, or they've been vetted by somebody in the management team and then brought to me for kind of a final look. What I'm looking for, again, is that self-managed business professional, somebody that doesn't need a lot of hand-holding or won't need a lot of hand-holding because we don't have the time or the wherewithal to hand-hold for long periods of time. Everybody gets a very, very fair shake at becoming integrated, but after that, they need to know that they need to leave their mark on the company in a positive way, and they've got their world to run. They always have help from the management team, and we try not to do a ton of micromanaging. We like people to run their side of the business like it's their business. So I'm looking for somebody who can exude that, who has maybe some experience and being very independent in their work. They still need to be collaborative. We don't want, a ton of fighter pilots out there. They still need to be collaborative to a certain extent, but the less handholding from management, from top to bottom, the more successful they're going to be. And it allows the management team to go out there and be, do what they're supposed to do and drive the business in their own way also. So, you know, it's really not a great answer that I gave you in terms of interviewing, because I don't do a lot of interviewing, but I know what I'm looking for in terms of a new hire from the mid-management level up, and they really need to be self-starters. That's the biggest thing that I'm looking for. Anyone can learn what we do. We're not rocket scientists. We're not building missiles. We're not putting people on the moon. So what we do can easily be learned. It's just a matter of, can they learn it and integrate it in their own, you know, their own personal space and, sure, and get it done in their own manner.
Yeah, and I think just that whole attitude towards, you know, hitting the ground running on your own and being very, you know, inquisitive in nature, be able to figure things out on your own first. Almost kind of that famous quote goes, you know, it's better to ask for forgiveness than for permission. You know, I subscribe to that. And, you know, a lot of the people that I surround myself on my team, it's, you know, I need you to first try things. I need you to figure out how to solve a particular problem before coming and asking, you know, your management or your leadership. And I'm pretty sure that's, you know, it's a unique skill set. It's not easy to find. It's, you know, it's something that you have to continuously work on. So that makes perfect sense what you're talking about.
You know, we always let people make mistakes. Mistakes, you know, there's a monetary a factor to every mistake. We hope that they're small. And I also hope that if somebody makes a mistake that's sizable enough, that I hear it from them first because they know where they went wrong. Mm-hmm. We always correct it in terms of, listen, my door is always open and our management team's door is always open. It's okay to make a mistake as long as you had good intention. Mm-hmm. As long as a mistake doesn't become repetitive, then we're okay. For the most part, we don't make repetitive mistakes, or the people don't make repetitive mistakes, yeah, but we have to give them the space to learn. Mm-hmm. I'm always afraid that someone's going to work out of the fear of being fired versus the knowledge of being correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little bit of a difference philosophy between the self-managed business professional and just the regular employee. You know, you have to have, there's a certain amount of both that you have to have, but the ones who are not afraid to make mistakes are the ones who always succeed in our organization for the most part.
Right. Absolutely. No, I love that analogy. You know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, not even looking at mistakes as a mistake per se. It's an opportunity to learn. It's an opportunity to get better. It's an opportunity to do things different. So that's, you know, that makes perfect sense and then definitely resonates. Billy, in terms of your sources of information, your sources of learning, what do you follow? What do you read? What are the different, share with us your, whether that's a Twitter profile or it's a particular blog that you subscribe to. Curious to get your take on your sources of information.
So it's great. Over the last couple of years, all of what I read on a daily basis is online, which is fantastic. I do read for basically half of my day. It starts out with online regional business journals, South Florida Business Journal, Central Florida Business Journal, West Coast Florida, all the way out throughout the Southeast. Every major business area in the Southeast puts out a online business journal. And typically there's 10 or 15 nice articles that some of them might be germane to our view of the area, and some of them might be, but like I would still read articles about what's going on with real estate in Birmingham, Alabama, because that might, an opportunity in Birmingham, Alabama might come up in 3 or 4 months from now. And I want to have a better feel for what's going on with, in terms of, are people staying or people leaving? What do commercial rates look like? Are warehouses being built, or are they being converted into condos? I always want to have a feel for the region or a city that we're doing business in or near. So I do a lot of reading outside of my field in those areas. Then I read a couple of sugar and sweetener business journals, looking for specific articles for you know, domestic needs and domestic supply. There's countries that we bring in a lot of sugar from, Brazil, Colombia, Mexico. I would need to know what's going on with them, not only in terms of what their sugar looks like, but their corn crops, their ethanol edicts, what their tax structures and their duties are looking like. Are their ports fully operational? Are there some construction going on in their ports, because that can affect the, you know, the timing of when we get sugar. So that's a lot of reading also. And then also for our trade corp, we have a joint venture trading company that trades corn and corn futures for risk management purposes for ourselves and our customers. I read a lot about what's going on in the corn market, and the corn market is also, you have to look at what's going on with wheat and soy, because those are complementary products that people invest in, and also what's going on with hogs, because hogs also, the byproducts, if hogs are doing well, then corn's going to be short on byproducts. If we're not producing a lot of hogs, it's quite the opposite. So I got to read all that. That basically lands me till about, at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because I don't get to read in a nice quiet room. I get to read in my office where I have an open door policy.
Right.
And then after that, so that's my day-to-day look. In terms of a general knowledge on how do I position myself as a better manager, owner of a business, and a person in general, I belong to, or my wife and I belong to YPO International. YPO is Young Presidents Organization. International is an international organization of business chair people, board, CEOs, presidents, directors of business of a certain size. And you have to get in before you're 45 years old. So you have to qualify and be accepted before 45. Once you're in forever. Through the YPO, through our chapter, we do some wonderful, wonderful events called In the Boardrooms. In the Boardrooms used to be literally you go to someone's boardroom, hosts you, and you have a half a day with them. They teach their business philosophies or their marketing philosophies and whatever their specialty is. And then, you know, then a lot of question and answer and a lot of learning from that. Those have become virtual over the last year. And I've taken advantage of more of those just because the timing is much quicker. I don't have to drive 2 hours to Palm Beach or an hour to South Miami in traffic. I can just get on, learn. So the learning has tripled in my life through our In the Boardrooms. Then the international group puts together almost on a daily basis some unbelievable educational online content. Some of it's for some of it you have to pay outside the realm of YPO to access it, so it keeps the groups a little bit smaller. But YPO has always been very, very involved with Harvard Business School and also Kellogg. And almost on a daily basis, you can find something live going on with a Harvard Business School or Kellogg professor. And it could range from, you know, managing an interior decorator business or a law firm, all the way to like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, I did a full day with a Harvard Business School professor on, what was it called? Extreme management. And it was 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and it was fantastic. It was like being in the classroom with them, super interactive. And that's what I go to YPO for all these, you know, make Billy a better person kind of educational needs.
Well, that's pretty cool. I, you know, definitely can resonate with, you know, with the YPO, and also something I've been looking at for quite some time, and the affiliation with, you know, what my alma mater from Harvard. I can only imagine, you know, the type of resources that made available to you.
Amazing, so right? Amazing,
absolutely. Yeah. You can't learn that. You can't just purchase that anywhere. I think it's super exciting. And on that note, what are you currently reading as far as a book? And what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
So, I used to be a very avid reader, and over the last year or so, I think I've been really slacking. A book that I recommend on a regular basis, I got it right here actually, is the Jordan Peterson book. Mm-hmm. It's backwards and stuff like that.
So. Yeah.
The 12 Rules for Life. I know he wrote a second book on the same kind of line, which I just ordered. So that will be my first book in a while. But I like that book. I don't believe in everything that he said, but it's fantastic. It gives you a little more of a 10,000 foot view of certain things, where I think that as humans, we can easily get bogged down in our own little mental box. And it's hard to take a really deep breath and elevate. And what he wrote in that book, one of the 12 elements will resonate in some sort of negative situation that you might have over the course of your life. You'll understand a little better, whether you agree with what he's saying or not, you'll have a perspective on it. And then also a methodology on how to manage it. So that's why I really, really like that book. It's a well-written, and he's a wonderful, I believe he's a psychiatrist or psychologist is his background. And he wrote it in a very, very easy way to digest, but also the lesson stays with you for a long, long time. So even a year or two or three or five after you read the book, when you're in a situation, you can actually remember what he said because of the way he broke it down. The other one that I reference a lot, and I recommend this to everybody, got this also here. The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F. that's also, I think it's well written, and it also allows me and allows, I've given anecdotes to my kids and my wife and other people around me, that situationally, you can break out of these mental blocks that we put ourselves in and not say, you know what, I don't give an F. Not that it's, I don't care. I'm just not going to give an F, and I'm going to move the direction. I'm going to move it that way. We're going to move it that way. That's what I really like about Mark Manson's book. So those are two that I recommend. I've read them a couple of times over, both of them a couple of times over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I'm encouraged to get back into reading a little bit more, but I don't know whether it's I just read so much every day or Netflix is so good or what, but the reading has definitely stopped or slowed down. But I'm encouraged to pick it back up again and start moving forward.
I'm with you on that because, you know, I have all these, you know, books on my desk, and I'm like, I got to force myself to read those because, you know, just like yourself, there's just so many other channels and avenues for other, you know, for my content diet, what I like to call, and just getting back to the basics as far as, you know, getting into the books is something that I got to force myself into.
Well, I know it takes 2 to 3 weeks to form a habit. So I know if I set aside 30 minutes every single night or every single morning or whatever to read, by the second or third week, it'll be old hat and it'll be regular again, as opposed to, you know, sitting on the couch for 30 minutes and watching, you know, whatever is on Netflix or, you know, it's just a breaking the habit and starting a new one for sure.
Yeah, that's super exciting. Billy, I know you're a very busy guy. I really appreciate your time today. Lots of insights. Definitely thank you for your time. I would like to do another episode sometime in the near future to see how much have changed, how much have transpired. Definitely want to stay in touch with you and really appreciate all the information today.
Oh, this was great, John, and I'm here for you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.